The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Zen Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts.
Sushan came to Guishan and asked, "I have heard that you say, with phrases, without phrases, just like wisteria leaning against a tree. So if suddenly the tree falls down and the wisteria withers, where will the phrases go?" Guishan laughed heartily. Sushan said, "I made an arduous journey of 4,000 leagues, even selling my clothes to come here. Why do you make light of me?" Guishan called to his attendant and said, "Bring some money and give it to this reverend monk for his travel expenses." Then he said to Sushan, "Someday a one-eyed dragon will let you open your eyes." Later, Sushan went to Ming Zhao and told him about this, and Ming Zhao said, "Well, we may say that Guishan is right both head and tail, but he didn't meet one who could appreciate him." Sushan asked again, "If the tree falls down and the wisteria withers, where will the phrases go?" Ming Zhao said, "That would make Guishan laugh all the more." When he heard this, Sushan gained realization and said, "From the beginning, there was a sword in Guishan's words." Each of us comes to this practice, to this Zen way, from different paths, different roads. But each of us at some point has encountered the mystery through a crack, an opening in our lives, a crack where perhaps the light has shined through, and it comes in different forms. Oftentimes, it's a question. What's going on? How do I proceed? How do I live my life? Things don't seem to be working the way I thought they did, they were supposed to. What do I do? How did I get here? And we often need these questions to spur us on. And these questions can resolve into some deep questions. But they spur us on into taking the path. Because often the tension of not knowing the answer is too much to bear. To hold on to a question like, what is this? And who am I? Help us move forward. Sometimes they're not that particular question. They resolve to that question. Just from our everyday experience, things don't always seem to add up. And perhaps we heard in our early days of our journey on the way coming here an answer, a phrase or two, something that held some meaning to us, but we weren't quite sure what it was. And these questions are in some way a proxy for this deep yearning that we all have as human beings to enter the mystery of life. But not all human beings come to a retreat like this. And quite frankly, very few do. So we're among the lucky ones, as far as I'm concerned. But being among the lucky ones, we have to hold on or work with this question, whatever the question is. And so We find a teacher. That teacher can be a book, can be a religion, it can be a philosophy, it can be a person. Someone who appears to know what we don't. Someone who appears to have an answer. And maybe not someone, but something. Our temple recently opened up a library. We've had a library since the beginning of the temple. It was generously filled by many people who donated books, including Melissa Roshi and David Roshi. Much of their book collection is here, and over 800 volumes, probably three quarters of that are all books of Zen and Buddhism and deep religious and spiritual paths. And you could claw through those books, and it's wonderful. There's some beautiful words, phrases, things in those books. But there are no answers to your question in those books. They may certainly spark insight. But whatever answer arises from within you. You provide the answer. So there's probably tens or hundreds of thousands of phrases in those 800 plus volumes in our library. And if you added them all up together, none of them would amount to one moment of pure zazen, one moment of an awakened breath, one moment of being completely you, here, now. And yet, we don't throw away the books. They're still part of our path. And we don't throw away the phrases and the words that we pull from those books. But often, what we do is we take these phrases and words. Maybe it's, what is this? Who am I? Maybe it's, why did Bodhidharma come from the West? Maybe it's, what do I do? Where do I go? And we often place the burden of our question on the teacher, whether that teacher is a person, whether that teacher is a book or a particular religion or a set of practices. And we look to them to provide us for an answer. And it's a great burden that we place on our teachers. For me, this crack, this opening, this question arose in my life, after a short period of deep loss and leaving me feeling unstable, like I did everything I was supposed to do, dotted the I's, crossed the T's, made the checklists, everything they said was supposed to work, but didn't quite work. Why? Maybe another list would help. Maybe another technique. Maybe just bad luck. But something said to me that no, there's more. And my introduction to Zen seemed to be the correct path for me. Mostly because I knew from a short period of time of practicing that no one was going to hand me the answer. It was required for me to find out, to take the path. In this story, Sushan approaches the teacher, Guishan, with a phrase that he collected. Maybe he heard someone say it that, he'd heard from a second source, or maybe he read it, or I don't know. And he held on to that. I've heard that you say, with phrases, without phrases, like wisteria leaning against a tree. What is that? What does that mean? For some, nothing. For some, it grabs you like a fish hook with a dangling worm. It's hard to appreciate what it must have been like in this 9th, 10th century in China when this story supposedly took place. What it was like. No health care. If you were part of royalty or in a government position, you probably had it okay. But for most people, most men in this case, you're probably a dirt farmer or cannon fodder in one of the many hundreds of wars that were broken out during those times. And you're possibly a lot of confusion. And joining a monastery might have been your only way out. And Sushan, traveling 4,000 leagues to get to his answer. Now, 4,000 leagues, I looked it up. It's about 12,000 miles or 20,000 kilometers. About, I don't know if there's 12,000 miles across China, but maybe he just walked himself in circles. Maybe he was exaggerating. Maybe it felt like 12,000 miles, selling all his belongings. But certainly, very committed to this question. And like I said, this question, there might have been something deep. There probably was something very deep inside this question. With phrases, without phrases, like wisteria leaning against a tree. What am I doing here? Why has my life come to this? Where do I go? What is it? What is this? Human beings, though, whether 1,000 years, 1,200 years in China or today, all have the same yearning, the same broken hearts. The same sense of aliveness, wonder, joy, sadness. We are human beings and we share that with these characters in this story. Now he travels so far. And maybe most of the traveling was in his mind. But he's met with laughter from the teacher. After all this work, the teacher laughs at him. Now we have to assume this was a genuine laugh. We have to assume this because this is a teaching story. This is also a great Zen teacher. This laughter. Laughter, as you know, comes from somewhere. but can't be forced, arises like enlightenment. The conditions have to be right, but laughter comes. When was the last time you laughed? Truly laughed. Maybe today, maybe last week. Each one an expression, each laugh an expression of being fully human, because it's what humans do for many different reasons. And so the teacher laughs. Perhaps a laugh of recognition. I know what it's like to be on this journey and have a question so deep and driving. I know what that's like. Maybe it was a laugh of joy, like, yes, what happens? The absurdity of life, the absolute absurdity of life. The absolute beauty of life. But Sushan is driven so deeply by this question, he takes it personally. It's not hard to take personally after all this effort, after all your effort to be laughed at, or perhaps told, no, that's not the right answer to the koan, or even laughed at. I have recalled several times in Doksan where I've laughed. I apologize if you took it personally. I never meant to give it personal, but there is a laughter. I find it arising in when I meet someone, because it's amazing. This question, these questions. It's an amazing experience to be a human being in search of a question. And so the teacher realizes the student is quite upset. So he gives him some money. He says, here, take some money for your expenses. He realizes that each one of us has a path that we have to travel on our own. We have to find the answer on our own. We all have a view of reality that is our own particular unique view of reality. And sometimes we just can't connect with other people, other teachers, or ourselves. And so the teacher Guishan recognizes this. Look, I honor and respect your arduous journey in your travels. Good luck to you. I hope you well. I hope you do well. Here's some money. I recognize myself in you. But then he leaves me with these parting words. Someday, a one-eyed dragon will let you open your eyes. Giving him a little bit of push, a little bit of acknowledgement. And isn't this the way what we can only hope for from our teachers? A little bit of acknowledgement for what we've been doing. Sitting here for 3 days, for a whole weekend, looking into the great matter, looking into what we're about, the hills and valleys of our life. And so Sushan goes to another teacher. Now, Alan mentioned yesterday that we have many teachers here. for transmitted teachers at Boundless Way. And you don't have to travel many miles to go to another teacher. But if we think that this teacher's not working for us, we have the options, but we have to understand and know that the answer is here within us. And we can get lost and caught in traveling from one teacher to another teacher. I don't like this person. They haven't given me the right answer. They've given me what I wanted. I don't like their Dharma talks. I don't like their my Doksan. It's just not working. And certainly that's legitimate, but realize this is a practice in a way for you. The answer is within you. And so he meets Ming Zhao a while later, maybe months later, maybe another 1,000 kilometers or 1,000 leagues later. And Ming Zhao says, "Well, we think that you met Guishan, but you couldn't see that he was giving you the answer, handing it to you right on the tip of your nose, and you couldn't see it." So we ask the question again. If the tree falls down and the wisteria withers, where will the phrases go? The same question. What is this? Who am I? What's going on? What is the path? What do I do? And Ming Zhao just affirms Guishan, saying, "Yeah." And that would make him laugh all the more. You keep searching, moving along. Yeah, maybe laughing at the absurdity of it all, or maybe laughter at, yes, keep looking. Yes, keep going. And of course, as many koans end, Sushant got it. He got it. He knew that he didn't have to have traveled 4,000 leagues. And yet he did. He had to. He knew that in that moment, that the answer was right there with him all the time at the beginning of his travels, the moment he asked the question, whatever question that was. And the answer is in with you. From the beginning, there was a sword in Guishan's words. The answer is here. It's never left you. But you need to travel the 4,000 leagues or whatever. You need to do it to realize that you've always been right in front of the answer. The path that you take, the path that we all take in this wonderful, incredible journey called Zen, called life, takes us exactly to where we've always been. The symbol of the Enso, the circle that goes around. It's a wonderful image of that. You start at the top, at the beginning of the circle, and you go round and round, and you realize you were always there on the circle from the beginning, always ending up back to where you were. And yet, not really. From the beginning, there was always a sword, always an open hand, always a finger pointing at the moon. We looked at the finger when we should be looking at the moon. Sushan came to Guishan and asked, I have heard that you say with phrases, without phrases, just like wisteria leaning against a tree. So if suddenly the tree falls down and the wisteria withers, where will the phrases go? Guishan laughed heartily. Sushan said, I made an arduous journey of 4,000 leagues, even selling my clothes to come here. Why do you make light of me? Guishan called to his attendant and said, bring some money and give it to this reverend monk for his travel expenses. And then he said to Sushan, someday a one-eyed dragon will let you open your eyes. Later, Sushan went to Ming Zhao and told him about this. And Ming Zhao said, well, we may say that Guishan is right, both head and tail, but he didn't meet one who could appreciate him. Sushan asked again, if the tree falls down and the wisteria withers, where will the phrases go? Ming Zhao said, that would make Guishan laugh all the more. When he heard this, Sushan gained realization and said, from the beginning, there was a sword in Guishan's words. Thank you. So please make yourselves comfortable. And this is a time for Dharma dialogue. You raise your Zoom hands if you have any questions about my talk or any questions about your practice this weekend. Sesshin or Zen in general. And we'll start with the chat. Oh, and I will also say, invite Alan to help me out.
Thank you for the talk. Actually, today and yesterday. At first, you know, what I guess what arose for me is this, the tree and the wisteria, and what sort of caught me in a little bit of a humorous way is whenever I do koans, you know, I always get stuck in the weeds, as Melissa Roshi tells me. And I felt like those were the weeds, right? And understanding the Dharma, and it's all there, right? And so then when he was laughed at, I felt that was sort of a more of like a the teacher recognizing, oh yeah, I remember the days when I was there, thinking the same thing, that I'm looking for the Dharma, but it's all around me, and now I know that, but I myself, as I'm doing this koan, don't know that yet, right? So that's sort of what arose for me. But I liked the laughter. To me, it was very sort of compassionate and breaking down that separation, right? Pointing at the teacher was once a student or always a student, still there, remembers when they were, like, you know, in that same role of what is the Dharma? Where is it? How do I find it?
Yeah. What I really appreciate about what you just said, though, is what you first said. It's stuck in the weeds. Okay, so we see the weeds and we think it's all about the weeds. We think it's, oh, I just get enough weeds out of here, you know, hack at the weeds enough, I'm going to be able to get. And we finally come to realize, no, it's the stuck in the weeds. It's being stuck in the weeds.
Yeah, there's a later Japanese collection called Entangling Vines that we don't have as part of our curriculum, but we sometimes use it. And so there it is, Entangling Vines. And there are those, you know, vines wrapped around the tree. And as Michael says, the point is that to get entangled. So the koan deliberately entangles us and then leaves us where we have to cut through.
Thanks, Chad. Sabrina.
I just want to say thank you for your talk, Michael. It felt like a roller coaster. You know, I went up and I went down right along with you. And this koan, for some reason today, hearing it made me think of the question, if a tree falls in the forest and there's nobody around to hear it, does it make a sound? And it just made me laugh. So just wanted to share that.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah. The question, if a tree falls in the woods, if, you know, those questions, those philosophical questions that kind of grab us, often there's something really deep in the underneath them, you know, like what is going on? What is the world about? What is my place in the world? You know, and those kind of questions, I think, can just pass us by. But when we have a deep practice like this, when we're sitting still, they sort of rumble underneath us, and we can kind of appreciate the chase or the quest for the answer.
If you ever are in the woods, especially sleeping in the woods at night, and you hear a tree fall, it's quite an amazing sound. And so I think of that, you know, this little koan probably got started when more people heard trees fall, and because it's not just a little crack, it's quite a roar. So if a tree falls in the forest, it falls in the forest.
Thanks, Sabrina. Anne.
Yeah, lately I've been thinking for other reasons about how hard it is to understand other human beings. I read something about Dogen, and he said this at this point in his life and something else at another and something totally different on a third later thing. And that we assume the words will stay consistent, both in our hearing them, in the person who told them, and they might be changing all of them.
Right.
So this idea that there's a word, there's a phrase, and it's held out there, and we can go back to it, is wrong.
Yeah, it's so true. I appreciate that, especially for, you know, considering seeing folks in Doksan. Oftentimes, someone will say, "You said," and I'm like, "What? What did I don't remember was saying that?" Or, you know, or I probably did, but in the what I said was for that moment in time. And for that, and we can often hang on to that, "you said," like this, like Sushan did, you know, "you said," you know, so what are you talking about? And it's gone. You know, we don't, the moment that we meet a person is that moment. And it's precious, but it's fleeting. And so we have to, in our practice, when we do, is we kind of see a person for the first time. And this is one of the beautiful parts. This is why I chose the Yubutsu Yobotsu part 3 that Alan had chose yesterday. There's a line in this that it's beautiful to see a person without, you know, knowing them, just to see them arise as opposed to all our preconceived notions about who they are or who anyone is. Yeah. Esther.
So thank you for the beautiful talk, Michael. Afterwards, I felt that silence that sometimes arises, almost as if a tree had just fallen and there's just quiet. You know, you took us into that courageous, or the place that takes courage to move into the, you know, inside the questions that bring us to this path. What brought us here originally? What keeps us coming back? And this, at some point you said something about the absurdity of something, and then right after the beauty of that same thing. And something about the absurdity really hit like an arrow for me. Not quite sure why, so I don't have the answer to why it hit me, but something happened in that moment around. Maybe that is right at the heart of the matter.
Yeah.
The absurdity, the beauty, the absurdity, the beauty.
I really appreciate that, Esther, because what you're pointing to for me here is the unnameable. And so this can be very difficult to work with. There's something that we just can't put our finger on or put our words on. And so we often grab hold of a particular phrase or a line and say, oh yeah, okay, that's what I mean. And to stay with this absurdity or this feeling that I can't verbalize this. I can't really put it into anything concrete. It's just this sense of absurdity or strangeness or beauty or awe or all this, and just staying with that. That's a really profound part of our practice, which we're able to do when we sit still in Zazen.
And supported by each other, you know, to have this courage to live inside these questions and showing up with teachers and not getting the answers and to continue to do this.
Right.
One of our koans is about someone who's asked to give a Dharma talk in a dream. And in the verse, you know, he preached a dream in a dream, and then it goes, absurd, absurd. And you know, it's the absurdity of Zen that I think often first catches our attention. We read about, you know, some koan someplace or some Zen story, and it seems utterly absurd. And yet what the way it draws us in is we have a suspicion that maybe there's a part of the mind to which it doesn't seem so absurd. And it's a part of us that we've been neglecting and that we've suspected all along was there. And so I think that absurdity is really key to our path.
Dave Lynchow.
Yeah, thanks for your talk, Michael. Today, with the koan, what really hit me was the line where the student says, "Why are you laughing at me?" or "Why are you making light of me?" I think that, I don't know, it's a good lesson for me. Like, I kind of thought about what I would be like if I were this traveling monk who just got there. I feel like I'd be like tired and kind of angry and dirty. And like, I'd be naked because I sold my clothes, like not the best version of myself in some sense. And the question is like, would I be able to say that, or would I just turn away from what I perceived as mocking? Because I think that he kind of perceived the laughing as mocking him. And I feel like most of my experience in life that I can remember has been turning away from that. If I sense that there's mocking, I don't investigate that or open to that. I just kind of like distract myself with something else or some narrative, or, you know, et cetera. And it actually reminded me of a couple of days ago, there's a, you know, a similar short guy who asks silly questions. It was my 6-year-old son. It's like a different context, but it's the same kind of idea. And he said, we were getting ready for a bath, and he said that he wanted to wear his dress. He wanted to wear a dress to school, but he was scared that the other kids would make fun of him. And I was moved by that, the ability to vocalize and open and be honest about something that you feel shame about or that you don't feel good about. And I was pretty 6 years old. He could do that. I could never do that when I was that age. Even now I struggle to do that. So I think sometimes we want to be the master who teaches him what to do and enlightens him, et cetera. But just that ability to do that was kind of, I found inspiring in this koan.
Wonderful. Yeah. The shame is an incredible lever in our, in the culture and in the world and of humans who meet. And I remember David Roshi, said before one of my first sessions, he said, you know, don't take this personal. Don't take anything personal. What? You know, all the corrections that I was given, don't take them personal. You could say that, but that's really, really hard. And yet, right there is the key, you know? It's not personal. Pierce.
Thank you, Michael, for taking us on a little journey on the Zen circle. And in particular for what you had to say about questions, Swayshan's question, or even, you know, the questions that we work with in practice, like who am I or what is this or just mu. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, that there's a certain kind of, I don't know, there's a certain kind of disapproval arises in me when I find these questions are present, because on the face of it, it seems absurd to ask, who am I or what is this? And yet questions arise, not just these questions, which are part of the practice, but more personal questions. One of them I mentioned last night, where is the past? I mean, it does seem like any rational person will tell you that is a question not worth investigating, or you know, that way madness lies. And yet, I think your talk emphasizes the fact that that full engagement with this way will require me to make contact with these questions, and just you know, just sitting with the possibility of being immersed in a question like this and allowing it to inform my intention, or just to contribute to my intention. Yeah. So thank you.
Well said. Thank you.
I'm thinking, Pierce, about how in adolescence, you know, we're kind of drawn to those questions, at least in my experience and many others in this culture, that who am I? What is this?
Yeah.
And then it's as though that's driven out of us, you know, and we're taught not to ask them. And then we become very, very resistant to ask them.
Yeah.
So they may seem a little, you may think that they're interfering or something, but the fact that we ask them, I think, is quite significant. That I think a lot of adults just don't want to go there anymore, and they lose touch with that adolescent who's really trying to figure it out, and is unhappy and doesn't think things are the way they should be. All of which is true. And therefore asks, you know, what is this? Who am I? And coming back to those questions, I think, is the way forward.
Barry.
Thank you for your talk and everybody else's comments. You raised the fundamental question, why do we come here? Why do we show up? And a basic aspect of psychological science is what keeps people alive is meaning, connection, and hope. Where else do you get to talk about multiple times a week life and death and one-eyed dragons, whatever the hell that is? And there is this sense of connection in the Sangha, but also to all the ancestors, which is this profound historical lineage. And this place is funny. It is funny and absurd. When Pierce Butler first said, oh, want to go to prison with me? It's like, what? But of course, it was a extremely compassionate direction to do that. But not many people are invited to go visit prisons out there in the world. And it become a profound interaction. And there are these surprises, like Brad's movement practice yesterday. These gifts, that's why I come. All those reasons, there's a lot of gratitude there that I hope comes through in what I just said.
Wonderful. Thank you, Barry.
We'll try to keep surprising you, Barry.
Yeah. Beverly.
Thank you. Thank you for the talk. This weekend is my first experience with koans, although I've, of course, heard them before, and I've kept my distance because they leave me speechless. But yesterday, listening to Alan and people's comments, it really made me curious, and also I was very, very touched yesterday by the koan, the care that was taken not to humiliate I can't remember his name.
Sushan.
Sushan, thank you. But today what stays with me is the incredible perseverance of Sushan. And I think that's important for me to hear that. So thank you, and thank you to the koan.
Yeah, and the incredible perseverance of every one of us here on the screen. It's wonderful. Yeah. And the final word from Brad. What have you got for us, Brad?
Well, I'm reminded of of my very first intro to Zen retreat day. And we did little 5-minute long practice periods and then we'd talk about them. And during one of them, it was out in a rural area, and apparently a neighbor was fixing a roof, so there was this hammering that was intermittent hammering that would go on, and someone mentioned it during the discussion, and the teacher said, "How about if it was just tok, tok, tok?" And that made a huge impression on me because I already had a picture of two people up there, one of them handing them the nails and so forth. And in a way that's applicable today, the furnace just went on and I named it, you know, and there's creaking on the floorboards, that must be, and so forth. So I'm busy naming everything, and I guess that's what Sushan is missing, like, but the tree fell over and the wisteria is dying. Can't we talk about that? You know, like, why do we stop talking now? And the other thing I wanted to say is that I could say that was a seminal moment for me, hearing the teacher suggest to just hear the sound as the sound. But I think I was doing that my whole life, you know, like I was wondering, can this just be the sound and not all these extra words and images? And I, you know, so all the way back. So not a seminal moment, but a bit of an affirmation. And it's still my koan. I mean, if there is one in the collection somewhere that has to do with that, can we bring it forward in the next session?
We just read it, Brad. We read it today in our sutra book and the Enmei Juku Kanen Gyo. Absorbing world sounds awakens a Buddha right here, now.
And it does seem, Brad, that I'm really feeling this as you speak, that Zen does not, in the end, teach us anything that we didn't know at some point, you know, that we didn't intuit, that we didn't feel. Sometimes we go all the way back to early childhood, you know, but it, to me, it seems to restore something that I would, that was just a glimmer that I dimly was aware of. And then it opens it up. So, but it's nothing new. It's not, you know, oh, I never would have thought of that. It's like, oh, I always seemed like there was something there. So thank you for bringing that out, Brad.
Thank you, Brad. So let's all go back into our seated upright positions.